untapped talent on cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to it. It's a Friday, a few minutes past nine. Well, let us get it started the official way. Welcome to it. It's a Friday, a few minutes past nine, right here on cliffcentral.com. My name is Sia Sangwenifin, and this is Untapped Talent. Thank you so much for listening and having me on. It's going to be an hour and a half. No, it's always very interesting as we get the most interesting people in studio, chat about the most relevant and current things really out there. And of course, we shine a spotlight on young people who are doing absolutely awesome stuff. And so because as well, it is a Friday, we're going to start it off and make us, you know, put us all in that weekend spirit. And one of those things is I've really spent the whole week really scouring the internet. And that's what you do. You get onto the internet for a couple of minutes. You think you'll be very professional and stick to things that will be productive. Next thing, you're on YouTube for like the whole day, it seems like. And that's exactly what I was doing. So one of the things that I actually found, I think so, it does actually count as being productive, right? If I was actually on there and now I'm talking about it on my show, that's kind of productive. I'll think like I've ticked it off in that box. A very interesting video that I've found, and it's definitely something that'll ease us into the weekend well, is a video by Todrick Hall. Now, if you know him, he's very unconventional with his YouTube videos. And he has basically taken all of Taylor Swift's pop hits and put it all really together in like this new viral video. So the YouTube star, Todrick, has mashed together some of T-Swift's biggest tracks for his four Taylor performance, proving that he fully deserves a spot in her squad. So Hall brings together massive songs like Bad Blood and Blank Space and We Are Never Ever Ever Gonna Be Coming Back Together and I Knew You Were Trouble. So all of Taylor's most loved songs. And it really becomes like, it's quite impressive really. It is a talent at the end of the day. He's gotten like 1.2 million subscribers on his YouTube channel, and he has a new MTV docu-series called Todrick. How original. It is his name after all. And I think, hey, listen, it is kind of impressive. So talk about getting into the weekend spirit in the proper way. This is Untapped Talent and Todrick Hall with his unconventional talent of mashing up Taylor Swift songs.
Nice to meet you, where you been? I could show you incredible things. Magic, madness, heaven, sin. Saw you there and I thought, oh my God, look at that face. Look like my next mistake. Life's a game, wanna play. We were both young when I first saw you. I closed my eyes and the flashback starts. I'm standing there,
and that's how it works.
On a balcony in summer air. When you were Romeo, you were throwing pebbles. And my daddy said, stay away from Juliet. You like,
and when we go
crashing down,
we come back every time.
We never go out of style.
We never go
out of style.
Baby, did you have to do this?
I was thinking that you could be trusted.
Did you have to ruin what was shiny? Now it's all rusted.
Oh, it's so sad to think about the good times you and I. Take a look where you
done.
Cause baby, now we got bad blood.
Hey!
Cause I knew you were trouble when you walked in.
But now we got bad blood.
You flew me to places you've never been.
And now we got bad blood. And we are never, ever, ever getting back together.
We
are never, ever, ever.
Cause now we got bad.
So listen, whether you're a Taylor Swift fan or not, you have to admit this is pretty impressive. It's one guy, he's almost like superimposed his voice all over the place. And that's how he has this Taylor Swift like amalgamation of notes. What a dramatic word to use. But hey, that's what Untapped Talent is all about. We're giving a light onto unconventional talent as well. So if you feel like you want to get involved in the show, you know you can always tweet us at @CliffCentral, @C_SF. Or you can send us a message on WeChat. Our official account is CliffCentral. type connect and message to show. So what we have lined up for the show for you today on the show, I'll be speaking a little later on to someone who can definitely offer people who want to be in the industry some great advice. His name is Athos Kyriakides, and I think I deserve a gold star for pronouncing his surname correctly as well. So he has been working in the film and television industry for quite a long time. Like, I mean, 15 plus years. He's been in LA, he's been in London, he's now based in South Africa. But I think so often we shine the spotlight on, you know, young up-and-comers on the show. But more than that, I think as much as you're a young up-and-comer, you need some advice from people who know better than you, people who've been in the industry longer. So take your pen and papers out, people. It's going to be a good one later on. But kicking things off as well, more people who are actually doing great stuff for young people out there, is someone all the way from Cape Town. And so I'll be chatting to the team behind Education on the Move. They are this digital, really do believe in digital education for our future generation. So Education on the Move is a mobile makerspace, aka digital classroom on wheels, that travels to schools to provide a reverse field trip experience for students, as well as an ICT center by bringing literacy, which is reading and writing, and numeracy education experiences to the classrooms. So Education on the Move is going to help students build confidence and endeavors to instill, enhance, and develop reading, writing, and numeracy with technology skills through hands-on learning. So it's quite impressive. I think it's absolutely awesome to always chat to people who are going out there and really focusing on some good, and especially if it's going to help young people out there. So straight after this, I'll be talking to Lauren Julius from Cape Town.
Sir Richard Branson had a game-changing idea. He made it happen. You have a game-changing idea, and now Sir Richard wants to discuss it with you aboard the Virgin Atlantic 787 Dreamliner. Presenting Dreamtrepreneur. Email dream at cliffcentral.com with your one-minute video or audio recorded business plan. If our panel of judges think it's a game changer, you'll be one of 10 to attend a course at the Joburg Branson Center of Entrepreneurship. Then, two final winners will take home 40,000 Rand in cash, 140,000 Rand's digital marketing package, 1 week in London attending Global Entrepreneurship Week, and time with Sir Richard Branson aboard the Virgin Atlantic 787 Dreamliner. An idea is only ever an idea until you make it happen. T's and C's apply. Go to cliffcentral.com for more info. Are you South Africa's next dreamtrepreneur?
At Sibanye Gold, we believe leaders are made, not born. We also believe we can create a sustainable legacy by helping to develop tomorrow's leaders today. Which is why we have partnered with the Leadership Platform to nurture leaders who are committed to growing our country's economy.
We are proud to say it's an initiative that's already showing glittering results. Sibanye Gold, we are one.
So we have Lauren Julius all the way from Cape Town joining us via Skype this morning. Good morning, Lauren. How are you?
Hi, Sia. I'm fabulous. And yourself?
You know what? You aren't just good. You aren't just great. You are fabulous.
Yes.
I absolutely love this. And listen, for lack of a better term, you are doing fabulous work as well. Let's just talk about Education on the Move. So it's quite a quirky way you got in contact with us, because I saw your tweets a while ago and then emails as well. So A for effort and A for determination, because we're finally chatting to you now. I think it's definitely worked in your favor. But let's get straight into it. Education on the Move. How would you basically summarize this idea that you have?
Basically, it is a digital classroom on wheels, so that will enable us to physically drive into the communities where there are lack of school infrastructures. So we will take the classroom to the kids. Mm-hmm. It will accommodate accommodate 20 kids, four spaces for disabled kids. And we'll teach them on the bus. We'll give them access to like digital equipment, so they'll get access to and learn how to work on a tablet and on the Chromebooks. Mm-hmm. And then also we will still engage with them like with physical education material as well.
So you're definitely focusing on using technology to enhance and inspire, you know, young people out there, and more specifically focusing on early childhood development.
That is correct, yes. Because we feel that I'm not sure if you have heard like around the campaign of the first 1,000 days of a child's life, and then the age group of like from 2 to four of how important it is to develop a child's brain and their senses and all the various cognitive skills and motor skills, because that is basically laying the good solid foundation mm-hmm. for school. Because that's where the problem comes in, that not enough learners are fully equipped to actually enter school.
Yeah.
And that is why there's such a big backlog, and we, like, kids, you know, they filter through the funnel, basically.
Yeah.
They don't end up graduating with good marks and that type of thing. So we're trying to break the cycle from the very basic grassroots level.
You know, Lauren, it's so easy for some of us who are privileged and who are fortunate enough to, you know, to have gone to preschools where the focus on, you know, bettering ourselves and really giving the best education out there, to be stuck in this bubble, really, of oblivion. But what is the reality Yes. that so many South Africans are facing in terms of education?
Wow, the reality is, there was a recent study done, and about 70 to 80% of, like, the national amount of children, as per the census, mm-hmm. they don't even have access to a creche facility or playgroup facility, preschool facilities. So they technically enter school at grade R level or grade one level, mm-hmm. not ever being exposed to holding a pen or writing or throwing a ball to each other. So, yeah, so it is really actually quite scary out there. And although there are a lot of organizations that are trying to fight this valiant fight, there are still, like you said, there's a lot of oblivion. And,
yeah.
No, let the government, it's a government's problem. And that is why we also just stepped up and felt like, you know what, we jumped off the bandwagon of complaining and, like, let government sort it out, and we're just trying to do it ourselves. And, yeah, the harsh reality is that a lot of parents are, in the cases of single parents, I mean, they need to work. And in a lot of cases, both parents work too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they don't have, like, that time or the effort to put into the kids. And even though they really want to, they're also not fully equipped.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if we can start with them from a young age, then they'll be able to help their child also better, and vice versa.
So most definitely, talk about jumping off the bandwagon of complaining and expecting, you know, just solely relying on the government to make things happen. You have created your own wagon. that's what you really hope to do, to create your own bandwagon of positivity and going out there and making the change. When did this idea actually come about, and how did this idea come about?
It came about 3 or 4 years ago. But we jumped on our bandwagon, as you said, beginning of the year, because fear is what kept us from actually pursuing it, and, you know, procrastination.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just decided at the beginning of this year, you know what, screw procrastination, we're just going to do this and see, like, where it ends up. And since we picked it up, it's been snowballing at phenomenal rate.
Wow.
And what inspired this is that we've always been involved in volunteering our time to go to children's homes or to hospitals. You know, you spend a few hours, you read a few books, you play. And then we just felt like there's more that we can do. And what inspired us to literally to pick this up at the beginning of the year was that there are so many children during school time that are at traffic intersections.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just sad, like, you know, the question comes up, like, why are you here? Besides the fact, of course, that they are desperate for food, the fact is you should be in school. And
yeah.
That is, like, what sparked it, like, even more, because in the realization of, but these children, they live, like, kilometers, like, vast kilometers from school. They don't have transport to school. And there are no proper structures for them. And that is how the idea came about.
And so for you, what would you have to say makes this project absolutely unique? And why should people begin to support it?
What makes this project absolutely unique is the fact that we will be able to traverse over, like, in the rural roads to the farms where there are, like, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the opportunity that we're mobile, so we can go wherever the need is. And we don't have to wait on financing to set up infrastructure, to set up proper security measures. And we have everything on the bus, and it is fully equipped to house the kids with safety and health regulations all adhered to. And I would say that would make us unique.
Yeah. And, you know, when I think of this idea, you know, I think of I watched the CNN Hero of the Year Awards a couple of years ago, and there was an old woman by the name of Estella, who also, you know, she worked for as a guidance counselor for the longest of time, and she was seeing how her community wasn't, you know, progressing forward. And to look at where the world is headed, you really do need a grasp of technology in order to move forward.
Yes,
so she
absolutely correct.
So she devoted her time. She spent some money as well, and she bought an old bus, and she got some people together. She put some computers in there as well, and is doing exactly what you aim to do as well, to go out there and to teach kids as well, all about really technology, and better yet, about just equipping young people to go out then be better people.
That's correct. And also at the same time, because our focus is mainly, besides, of course, it's like through the digital medium, but our focus is on developing that reading, writing, and numeracy skills, which so lack in kids, you know. And it's not always a case of that they are dumb or that they are slow. It is just that those basic skills hasn't been instilled in them properly at a young age. So that is what we want or aim to do, like via the digital medium, and then make them tech savvy once they enter senior primary and high school, where they use the technology all the time.
Okay, so Lauren, where are we now in the timeline of this idea? You know, it's a great idea. I fully am behind it. I hope many other people will jump on and support as well. But where are we now?
Where we are now is that we've got all our equipment and we've got all our teaching aids, etc. We are now at the place where we are sourcing the correct bus. So if everything goes well, we will launch with a new school year in 2016.
That is fantastic.
Yes.
Wow, so you're already like just 3 months away.
Yes, from this reality happening. And if I can just add, we are currently in talks with CNH Industrial. They build the Iveco buses and the trucks and that you see on the road all the time.
Yeah.
We are currently in talks with them because, believe it or not, we have reached out to West Coast Customs, you know, from Pimp My Ride.
As in Pimp My, yeah, I was about to say, hold up. Yes.
And they are so excited to actually build this bus for us and have it shipped over and also include us as part of the show.
Okay, hold up, Lauren.
And also all our sponsors, they'll give them media exposure. So
I just need to sit down for a second with this. Here you were just simply planning on a bus with computers, etc., to go out and teach people.
Yes.
But you know, reaching out to West Coast Customs, you aren't just going to get just a nice, pretty bus. I think they're going to absolutely pimp your bus. Like, are you now expecting like a sky, like a little convertible bus with a bookshelf that'll come out from the side and like lights underneath it? How far are they going to take this?
Yes, we said for the first build, definitely not too over the top, but they have come up with really exciting ideas that we could include a reading space inside the bus as well, which would unfold from the bus and all of that.
You see, so, the mere fact that they're now talking about something unfolding, I feel like it's going to be quite a production and a half. Okay, so they think about a little reading space, okay?
Yes, and of course, then we will have the desk space where the kids will sit, and we'll have swivel chairs so the kids can turn to each other, which will help them engage like with their social skills and also the peer-to-peer learning.
Mm-hmm. That really is awesome. I'm at a loss for words right now because, sorry, as soon as you mentioned Pimp My Ride, I'm getting these images now in my head of like how this bus is going to look. But Lauren, of course, you aren't the only one working on this. Who are some of your team members and some of your partners that you'd really like to highlight and thank as you move forward in this journey?
We are two business partners in this. The other lady is Carla Davidson. Her background is in mechanical engineering and science. So she's also really passionate about developing that science skills and just sparking the interest in the kids from a young age already. And then there are our partners that we're partnering with in terms of education is Brain Boosters and Pebbles Project in the Cape Winelands. And then there's also the Green Shoots Education and the Foundation for Community Work. So we'll be working with those three organizations to reach their network of the ECD, in other words, the early childhood development centers, and we will engage with their current network and how to improve the curriculum, and we're basically enhancing their thing. So in the first year, which is next year, 2016, is our pilot year, we'll be reaching close to 100 schools.
Wow.
Which is, which is quite a lot of children as well. So, we invite anybody else that want to come on board. You know, like if you want to avail your time to teach or to help us develop our program further, please, give us a shout. Our email is edu@gmail.com.
Okay.
And then there's a special thanks that I want to send out to Beverly Wharton Hood from Pearson Education, because they have sponsored us with a lot of reading material, activity books, as well as a complete e-learning curriculum. And this will be an ongoing relationship with them. They will provide us with reading material and activity books. And also Bertie Lubner from the Lubner group of all the woodwork and the furniture and things.
Uh-huh.
He has been our first champion to inject some cash into us. Well, so very much big thanks to them.
Absolutely. Now, I just want to know from your front, Lauren, and from Carla's side as well, what keeps the two of you motivated and keeps you going and driving this project forward?
What keeps us going at this stage is just the phenomenal support and an interest like in our service, and the fact that we're definitely on the right move, and just engaging with teachers at the various ECD centers where we will be, like just the excitement and like from the kids' side already, because we've introduced the concepts to them and how we will be working within our pilot year. And just that excitement alone is more than enough of gratitude and motivation for us.
Well, listen, I just have to say, from someone who's, so invested in making our country better by focusing on young people, really, they are the future of our country.
Yes.
I just absolutely have to say thank you so much for all that you do. And most importantly, thank you as well for stopping by the show, and all the best of luck. T-minus 3 months, right?
Yes. I'll keep you posted.
Absolutely. So I want pictures. Keep us in the loop. And of course, if you ever want just a few minutes to chat about the project on air as well, let us know. So thank you so much, Lauren. Yep. Julius. And once again, that email is edgyonthemove@gmail.com, right?
That's correct.
Fantastic.
So, that's right.
I really have nothing else to say except thank you, and all the best. Enjoy the rest of your day, Lauren.
Thank you. Can I just thank someone in particular too?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It's Brent Lindeke with his Rack 15.
Yes, our good stuff guy.
I just
want to
say thank you to him because he's a continuous inspiration for us as well, really. He's such a great motivator.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Lauren. Thank you so much for stopping by Untapped Talent this morning.
Awesome. Thank you.
Untapped Talent on CliffCentral.com.
This is Untapped Talent on CliffCentral.com with myself, Sia Sangwenifin. So as I said at the top of the show, we always talk to young up-and-comers who are doing great things in the industry. And yes, as great and awesome as it is, I think once in a while you need advice from people who know better than you and who have more experience than you, right? Of course. So I have, I think, quite the qualified person joining me in studio this morning. Athos Kyriakides.
Perfect.
Yeah, okay.
Perfect. I'm very impressed.
I think maybe I was Greek in my past life.
It could be.
No, that's a lie. That's a lie. I just wanted to seem cool, and maybe let's see how that goes. Athos, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
No, thank you for having me.
All right, so I don't even know where to begin, because I think the greater conversation is all about the realities of the industry, the entertainment industry. And so many people are so bright-eyed and bushy-tailed about coming in here and doing great things and conquering the world, but then you get into it and you see a whole different other world. And so as someone who's had 15 years in this industry, been all over the world, literally, I'm definitely excited to have you on. So once again, thank you so much for being here. I want to start off with your own personal journey. Where did it all start for you?
It's been like almost 15 years. I guess it started with like a real deep love and passion for cinema.
Okay.
I loved movies. And from a young age, I just kind of like, I couldn't remember anything else, but you ask me anything about movies and I'll tell you who was in what,
now I have
how great the film was.
Now I have to ask, what's your favorite childhood film?
That's a tough one. Hey, I think maybe I'd have to go with Spielberg's Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Ooh.
Love Indiana
I think
Jones.
Anyone who instantly mentions like Spielberg is super classy and knows their movie
Thank
stuff.
You.
Okay, so you have like 3 gold stars for that one. Okay, so you're always a child just fixated with the screen.
Yes, I was just, I loved cinema and at that point I didn't know how I could fit in.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a leap of faith. I went to LA when I was 19.
Wow.
And through a connection I had here, I got an internship at a company called October Films,
mm-hmm.
who were owned by Universal Studios at the time.
Yeah.
And they made a lot of like art house, really like films that had a lot of depth to them.
Yeah.
Like they made stuff like Being John Malkovich. They made Robert Duvall's The Apostle.
Ooh.
They made Lars von Trier's Breaking the Waves. So they were doing a lot of like really interesting, edgy films. And it was like, it's the kind of films that I wasn't really exposed to in South Africa because we weren't getting a lot of that
yeah.
kind of stuff. Like I loved the mainstream Spielberg stuff, but like interning at that company like just yeah. showed me a whole other world.
But I have to say, let's backtrack it. But when you were 19,
yes.
did you have a clear plan in your head of how you were going to get into the industry and what you were going to do within the industry?
Not at all. I didn't even know that I'd end up becoming a writer. But I just kind of, when I started interning, the first thing that I did was they'd give me scripts that were coming in.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to read them and write up a report. So like over 6 months, I'd read like 400 screenplays.
Wow.
And then sort of started to realize maybe I could write as well. But even then, it was so premature.
Yeah.
I had no idea that I would end up becoming a writer.
Wait, so you basically were in charge of what the top guns in the company saw on their desk?
Effectively, yeah.
So can we say that you probably ruined someone's career by not passing through the right script?
I mean,
or you thought it was horrible?
Possibly. I guess. Yeah, could be. I mean,
someone out there hates
that. I hope that I turned down projects that really didn't have any potential.
Yeah, okay.
You know?
We'll
but
hope
I mean,
for the best, yeah.
Yes.
But I do have to say, I think that's, you know, it seems like your story seems like one from a movie script, for lack of a better term. Someone moving to LA from South Africa at the age of 19. What were your expectations when you moved over there versus like the realities of LA and Hollywood?
I didn't really have any preconceptions when I got there. Because initially I'd booked just to go for 3 weeks.
Okay.
I wasn't actually going to stay there. And
3 weeks for like a holiday?
Just to kind of like get a sense of what LA is about, how the film industry works.
Yeah.
I didn't really think I'd end up staying, but because I had this contact who put me in touch with this company,
yeah.
and I got an internship. It was literally like I was supposed to fly back to South Africa 3 days. I called my parents and I was like, I'm staying for a year. So
how did that news go down?
Well, my parents, like at that time, you know, they wanted me to do a BCom,
yeah.
you know, do the
traditional education.
Education, like to, you know, they didn't really have a concept of like what kind of position I could take up uh-huh. in the industry. They just felt it was like an outlandish idea,
yeah.
but they kind of just went with it, and hopefully, you know, they've seen that it has worked out.
Oh yeah,
in
yeah,
the
yeah.
long term.
Now, your first couple of days, I cannot even imagine how it must be. You're 19 years old, starting off as an intern. You are in Hollywood.
I guess I could only have done it when I was 19, because I think if I was much older,
uh-huh.
I probably would have talked myself out of it. But because I was so young and impressionable and passionate about somehow getting involved,
this is one of those things.
I just
like
took a leap. But I do remember, because I had a flight from New York to LA, and I had like serious anxiety on the way, because I was like, "What am I doing? I'm going on like the other end of the planet."
Yeah.
On this like dream that, you know, it just seemed completely outlandish.
Yeah.
Where I thought, oh my God, what am I doing?
What still made you commit to it nonetheless, even with those thoughts?
I think it was like, I loved movies so much that I just, there was an intuitive sense that I could somehow do something, you know,
mm-hmm.
that with my passion alone and my love for film, something, the universe would somehow make a plan for me. And I guess that's what happened.
Now, those first couple of days as an intern in Hollywood, did it seem exactly like there should be music in the background? You should have backup dancers? Was it as picturesque as we always see in the movies?
In a way, it was, because you kind of like, even just walking the streets, you like bump into famous people that you've idolized your whole life, and you like, I can't believe I just walked past Sean Penn, or I can't believe I'm having coffee and right next to me is Meg Ryan with her kid.
Wow.
You know, it was that kind of thing, and I was just like blown away.
Which years was this?
Because this was 99.
Okay, 99. Okay, so Sean Penn, yeah, still hadn't done I Am Sam.
No, not yet. He hadn't done it yet.
Meg Ryan was still a thing straight after You Got Mail.
Yes, that's
okay,
right.
Okay, so yeah, bless herself.
I bumped into Angelina Jolie at a pre-Oscar bash that my company had, and she was really young then as well.
Wow.
You know, this was like long before, you know, she met
Angie,
Brad
the mother
Pitt
of 600
major
kids.
Mother of 600 kids, exactly, yeah.
That must be absolutely amazing.
No, it was mind-blowing.
So how long
really
did you stay in LA?
So I ended up staying a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sort of like my work visa ran out, so I had to kind of decide to come back at that point. And having come back, then I sort of got in touch with Prime Media, who were developing films at the time. So I started sort of in development with them, looking at their projects.
Okay.
And I did that for a couple of years, and then I ended up moving to London, where I was like doing...
Hold up. Now we have to understand that decision as well. So there you were making independent movies here in South Africa. Why did you feel like you had to go to London?
I felt like after LA, coming back to South Africa, because the industry was so young at the time, mm-hmm. and, you know, it was still building itself up. And having been to LA, where it's like a completely built up industry already,
oh, yeah.
I felt like London would be an opportunity to sort of continue what I did in LA.
Mm-hmm.
So I went again, like I didn't really have any leads, but I went to London and somehow
I feel like that's the constant. You just, you know, like leave and you see if it works out.
Yeah, you know, I think where there's a will, there's a way. I know it's kind of a cliche, but like
cliches are
really
there
believe,
for a reason, because they are true though. You know? Yeah. So where about in London did you go? Where did you work?
So
where were you living?
So I was living in central London, and it was fortuitous, because when I got there, the London Film Council had just been established and they were looking for script editors.
Wow.
So I put my name forward and I went for an interview and I got it. And so I was script editing for the British Film Council,
mm-hmm.
And then I got a job at BBC Scotland and Film 4, just reading and script editing projects that were being developed and ultimately got made.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm trying to look at your life thus far, and it's very hard not to say that, oh, things just happened and was just like, these things aren't really like, I think sometimes it's like destined. And
I think it is. Yeah, there's a bit of divine destiny going on there.
Of course. Yeah. Before we get too deep though.
Yes.
So how long did you stay in London before you came back to South Africa?
2 years I was in London, mm-hmm. and then ended up coming back here. And actually at that point was when I really started writing a lot of my own stuff, because before that I was just script editing other people's work.
Yeah.
And then when I got here, it sort of occurred to me that I could be a writer myself. My first real writing job was on a show for SABC 2 called Chacha,
uh-huh.
Where I wrote 3 episodes. I think it was season 2 or 3. I can't remember now. And then straight after that, I was at Scandal for 3 years, where I ended up writing, so I lost count, but probably about 200 episodes.
So at that stage, you definitely saw that now my vision is in
definitely,
writing.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely in there.
I look back at my writing then and I think, wow, I was so raw and undeveloped. And I think as a writer, you realize that it's only after like a long period of time that you eventually become a good writer, because you have experiences to draw on. When you're very young, it's difficult to really be a great writer,
yeah.
because you haven't had life experiences.
Now with experiences,
there's you know,
this,
there's points of reference.
Yeah,
there's,
this authenticity,
you know, you can
tap
into emotions.
You know, I look up to writers in any sort of form, you know, be it a songwriter, because at the end of the day, you really have your thoughts and your experiences or whatever you want to translate. And essentially, you now have to word it in a way that resonates and relates to different people. I think in a song, it's one thing because you have a hook and you have certain bars and you can make things rhyme.
Yes.
So it might be, I'm not taking anything away from writers, songwriters, might be a little easier. But when you're trying to tell a story now, you know, you may know that, okay, I want to deal with a protagonist who's going through heartache, and this is the message I want to leave viewers with. But how do you go about actually scripting that? I think that might be a bit daunting.
No, it's an interesting question, because I guess there's like a lot of different kinds of forms of writing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing a daily soap, it's just so intense and so relentless, because you're writing 5 episodes a week. Well, I'm not doing it myself, but you know, we've got a team of writers who will take on 1 episode a week. And so the way it works with soaps is that you kind of develop the long story arcs,
okay,
so that all the writers are on the same page, and then you break it down into scenes, and then those scenes get given to the writers, and that's when you really have to dig deep and look for the emotion, look for the kind of the inner turmoil that the character's going through.
Yeah. So that will, case in point, Sia in a drama series, Sia's going through it. Sia lands up divorced.
Yes.
And so you now break it down to who was he with? Why is he getting divorced?
Exactly. All of that stuff, you know. And you really have to tap into it. You really have to get into, you know, Sia's headspace.
Yeah.
Why did he have that breakup? You know, what led to it? What were the extenuating circumstances that brought about that divorce, you know? So
I must think, Athos, you know, we have our own issues. Life is already hard enough. Now you want to sit with the character's issues. And how do you ever get to like switch off and go and be like, okay, I'm going home. That's it. That's done.
Yes, not really.
Clearly, hey?
Like,
not.
No, you take it home with you, you know? You never stop thinking about it. And I guess that's one of the drawbacks of like being a writer. I mean, you can't really just like put it on a shelf and pick it up the next day.
Yeah. And now you're working on SABC3's Isidingo. Do you feel a personal connection with the characters?
I do, yeah. I mean, I've been with Isidingo almost 2 years now. So, and we've introduced quite a lot of new characters.
Mm-hmm.
So I do feel like connected to them, because especially the new ones, but also the old ones, because, you know, even when I wasn't working on Isidingo, I was watching the show and investing myself in some of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
So, I really do feel like I connect with a lot of the characters on the show.
How much of what is going on in the world influences something that we see on a soap?
On Isidingo, very much so.
Yeah.
You know, we're always looking at current issues, global issues, but also just national issues, you know. I also write, like, we call them the TX scenes, which are the scenes that, for instance, you know, if something big happened this morning, I could write a scene and it would be dropped into the episode tonight.
Wow.
Like, we actually, I'm just trying to think, like, I think it was last week or the week before, we had two characters talking about the whole, you know, DJ Zinclair, Bonang.
Yes.
AKA Triangle. Not in an insensitive way, but people are talking about it.
It's relatable.
It's relatable.
If you spoke about it at the office, if you heard it on your way home, you're now sitting in front of the TV in the evening, and here you are, these characters who you relate with.
And our audience love that about Isidingo. It's always been part of the DNA of the show.
Yeah. It's definitely something cool, I have to say. But another thing that I'm sort of hung up on, yes, as a writer for a soap, you guys film quite a way.
3 months in advance.
God, isn't that kind of risky to a certain extent?
It is, but because we have so much to deliver, it's the only practical way to do it, you know. Yes, it can lead to problems. I mean, you know, you could write a whole storyline for a character, then suddenly something happens to him,
mm-hmm,
and you've got 3 months of storyline that you literally have to throw out the window and start again. And those things have happened over years, you know.
That's when you get a character who's randomly now, they've married off or they ran away.
Or you can't get hold of the actor. I mean, I remember on Scandal days, and I won't name the actor, but the actor just disappeared. Nobody, he like fell off the face of the earth.
Oh, I think I know who it is.
And it just, it was a huge, huge.
So that was real. The person just disappeared.
Yeah. Completely fell off the face. Nobody could get hold of him.
So how did you guys spin that around?
Well, it literally involves, like, you know, completely scrapping 3 months of storyline and starting from scratch, figuring out how to write him out for that period. You know?
Shucks. You know, I know with Isidingo particularly, I don't think you were there at the time, but with the passing of, her name just...
Lee.
Yes, Lee.
Yes.
Yeah. That the way it was dealt with, I still think to this day, there's no other scene or episode or a series that stands out to me in South African television. I'll never forget having Barker Haynes going out into the mountains looking for a daughter and the tears.
Oh, yeah, they really made that
work.
Whoa,
if that is not a boo-hoo-hoo moment. Yeah.
But they found a really plausible way to deal with it, you know.
And I think it was, you know, not distasteful. It wasn't tacky. Because when I heard they're going to incorporate her death into the series, I was like, come on, people.
It was almost like they paid homage to the actress.
Absolutely.
Because she was such a great presence on the show.
Yeah.
And it was such a shame, you know, that she ended up dying the way she did. But
yeah. But I do think it was dealt in a nice manner. But listen, Athos, after everything you've done, you know, gone to LA, you've also consulted on projects like my favorite, Silver Linings Playbook. And you're now in South Africa based, you know, working on Istingo, et cetera, et cetera. I think the big questions that I'd like to ask you is the industry. Is it all glitz and glam as we all might think it is?
No, I don't think it is. I mean, like, there's a lot of hard work that goes on behind the scenes. I mean, sure, you do your premieres, you do the
yes.
functions when the production's done, and that's all great.
But that's one night in a season.
Exactly. The nitty gritty of actually putting a show together is very demanding.
Mm-hmm.
In all facets, whether that be writing, whether that be your talent, whether that be your technical people behind the show, it's not a walk in the park, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of work that goes on behind it, and I think the only way you can survive in this industry is if you stick to your guns and you're focused and you know what the end goal is.
Yeah. Now, if I, as a young person, I've just matriculated from high school, I'm really interested in the arts, particularly maybe being on television or somehow incorporated in production. What would you advise I do?
I mean, I think it's always good to get training, you know, at there's a whole variety of institutions that you could go to. And now it's built up. It's not like it was when I was 19, you know. When I was 19, AFTA had just started.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now there's film schools around the country. WITS is a great place to go for dramatic arts if you want to be an actor, because they regularly, the alumni get good work on TV shows, and they're very strong actors.
Uh-huh.
So the theory behind it is very strong. But I think it's just like, it's getting the training, and then just, you know, getting yourself, the other thing is getting yourself an agent.
Yeah. What are some of the agencies we should look out for? I know there's a lot of talk around Munyan Lee Associates, I think.
Munyan Lee is one of the biggest.
Uh-huh.
There's Legends, there's Artist Connection. There's quite a lot. And they're all very good. And of course that's what I've started doing myself, is representing talent.
Yeah.
And the reason I've started doing that, what I've realized over the last year is that, although these agencies are good, they have so many people on their books that it's very hard for them to give their artist a really kind of hands-on personal approach.
Yeah. You might become just another number
sort
on
of
the
like
list.
Another number sometimes.
Yeah.
There, you know, and that's why I've taken on three artists this year who I've taken a very hands-on approach, and I'm managing their careers, looking for something that's exactly right for them and their target market.
Okay. Now, what are some of the things we should be looking out for from someone who promises to be our agent or be a manager? You know, because we don't want a fly-by-night who promises us the world and wants a deposit of X amount. Meanwhile, they have no credibility and they're out the door in
yes.
3 weeks. What should we look out for if we are looking for an agent or manager?
I think it's always good to, before you even do that, to try and get some practical experience. Like, even if it's student films, just getting a sense of, you know, what it's like being on a film set or a TV set.
Okay.
Because it's very difficult for someone who hasn't done anything before to just kind of expect them to slip straight into the way things work. So if you can, especially if you're going to film school, you'll get that practical knowledge because they're shooting stuff at high school. And when you come out, sorry, not at high school, but at varsity.
Yeah.
When you come out of varsity, at least you have that. You know, you're not kind of like fish out of water who's just expecting to get a lead role in a show, because that hardly ever happens.
Yeah.
But I think it's you know, approaching agents, even if you're very like green and just getting started.
Wet behind the ears.
Wet behind the ears. That's what I was. That's the phrase I was looking for. And letting them know that you are passionate, letting them know that you have these kinds of interests and you want to tap into these kinds of characters. And I think they'll, just from your enthusiasm, they'll see that you're serious about this. Because you can usually tell someone who is just kind of thinking about it but not really taking it seriously.
Or someone who's really committed. As opposed
to someone who's really committed and is going to do everything in their power to make it work for them.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's face the reality. Is every single actor or someone who's in the entertainment / media industry going to be a Charlize Theron? If we have hopes of going to Hollywood, would you advise we just pack up our bags and we just move over to LA and hopefully we'll be in a bank and we'll throw a tantrum and there'll be an agent?
To be honest, like, most of the stories I hear of like actors who go to LA, they end up struggling, they end up like waitering in a bar hoping for that big shot. I mean, having said that, there are like a lot of actors who've made it work, you know. Mm-hmm. They haven't become huge like Charlize Theron, but they're getting regular work.
Who are making a living, a basic living as actors.
Exactly, yeah.
But would you recommend that? I know it's like a tricky question to ask.
I would recommend that, but I would say it's always better like getting some local experience. Try get on a couple of local shows before you end up making the move, because it'll just help you in the long run. You go to LA and there's so many people who are going to LA hoping that, you know, it's their time, that they're gonna, you know, they're gonna like make a success of it straight away. And it's the reality is that it's very competitive there, and you're also going as a foreigner, so it's extra hard to make it work.
And you might be stereotyped into this role, and there might not be a lot of roles of like this person out there.
No, exactly. But and you obviously have to, you know, it helps if you can do different accents. Mm-hmm. Because they're not going to cast a South African character on an American show.
True.
I mean, it hardly ever happens that they would write a South African character into the show. Unless it's Neil Blomkamp and he's writing South African characters into his
then
films.
You better make friends with Neil and Charlize. Who else?
It helps. Just it helps if you're friends with them.
Band all the South Africans together and make friends. But, you know, the analogy I always think of, I can't remember where I heard this, but they said, you know, going to an industry like America, you know, in Hollywood, you will be like a maintenance man because you're just going at the flow. It's already established. You just have to make it work. Whereas in an industry like South Africa, yes, a lot of people may say it's a tiny industry, but at least you have chance to break new ground. So
absolutely,
that's definitely the silver lining.
And
in
I actually
our situation.
See it as an exciting thing that the industry has grown quite a lot in the last 10 years.
And
we are making really interesting shows now.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I was head writer on a show called Room 9, which was on SABC One.
That was very, I think it broke new ground, really.
Well, and that's what's so exciting. It's like, it's the first time we've ever tried to do sci-fi.
Yeah, it was very dark. I was like, I don't know what SABC One is doing right now. Yeah.
But at least we tried something different, you know? And I think audiences responded to that. I mean, we got great viewing figures from the SABC.
Mm-hmm.
I won a SAFTA for writing the show last year.
A South African Film and Television Award, right?
That's right, yeah.
Uh-huh.
So we also won for Best Editing. So it definitely had an impact.
That's fantastic.
And I look at new shows, like one of my clients, Pabi Mohanedi, she's on a show now called It's Complicated from Mzansi Magic.
Uh-huh.
And it's a really interesting show because it feels like it almost feels a little bit like Sex in the City, set in Joburg. Three women, three men talking about relationships.
I wouldn't even say love triangle, because it's like a love pentagon. Like people everywhere in relationships and yeah.
Yeah. And then I got another actress who I'm representing, Didi Makobane, who is her new show is about to premiere on Mzansi Magic on the 11th of October. It's called
Yala, isn't it not?
That's it, yes, and that's different as well, you know. Like Mzansi is doing some interesting things, SABC is doing some interesting things, ETV is doing, you know, it's the rivalry is good because it's making us all better.
Yeah,
you know, it's we keep raising the bar, and that I just see great things for the South African film and television industry, you know, going forward.
Absolutely. And so most definitely, just your last word of advice to anyone out there who has aspirations of getting into the industry, what would you have to say to them?
I would say, if you're passionate about it and you believe in yourself, you just got to stay on that path, even if it seems difficult at first.
Yeah.
Things will work out. The universe has a way of realizing the dreams that you have. And I think just, you know, like, yes, you will go through periods of doubting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really believe and you're really passionate about what you do, it'll happen.
Hey, and listen, I heard once that Madonna went through like a month of just eating popcorn for dinner. So if you can still afford
good meals.
And if
we think about Charlize Theron, who was at first struggling in LA, and she had, you know, a big freak out in a bank, and an agent saw her.
Well, we don't want to promote aggression in banks.
No, I'm not saying you should do that, but it just goes to show, you know, that somehow
we can make it happen.
We can make it happen.
Athos, thank you so much for joining me this
morning.
Thank
you for having me.
You really imparted great words of wisdom. We're making mental notes galore. So thank you so much for stopping by this morning.
Pleasure.
So thank you to Lauren Julius as well earlier for joining the show. And thank you for listening. Until next week, we'll do this again. Fridays, 9 a.m. on cliffcentral.com. My name is Sia, and I'll see ya.
Untapped talent on cliffcentral.com.